Then since 1997, I attended one of the Mapper's conferences. 96, I was even involved in hosting up in Tahoe the year that we got snowed on, and everybody came out the second day. But I've been doing this for several years. I first started drawing assessor's maps in 1976 here in Sacramento, drawing five counties in the state of Alabama. They entered into a contract with a company that I worked for. The state recognized the fact that they had assessment roles that were a little lacking. The common running joke at the time was you have a county of, say, 20,000 parcels and maybe 4,000 were getting bills. And we just assumed that those were the people who called up and complained about something, and so they rewarded them with tax bills. I started working for Placer County in 77. With Public Works Department. I was involved with the Surveying and Mapping Department before I went to the assessor, and I've been there ever since. I realize at this time of day it's a bit of a challenge to get somebody that's going to speak their piece so that you can get out of here. It's late, so I'll cover it as quick as I can. My topic is a little odd, I guess. Through our supervising mapper, I kind of passed the message to Anita that I guess I've been kind of brewing and complaining about a few things through the years, and so it was kind of like, okay, put your money where your mouth is and come up and say something about it. The topic is mapping division responsibilities and principles and problems of mappers in the state of California. So what does it mean? When I made the offer, it was based on the fact that this organization was created back in 86, 87. There was a Mappers Conference in Fresno and Sacramento County. The big topics at the time were TRA change problems, and surprisingly enough, it was getting Mappers certified. Here we are 25, 26 years later, and still no certification. I know George last year, I believe, submitted his proposition to the Assessors Association. I do not know where it has gone since, if it's moved at all. The other thing at that time was, with the exception of LA County, who I think has been doing electronic mapping since the dawn of time, at least they were the ones always giving the presentations, it was a rarity to see anything about AutoCAD or GIS. We talked about the core topics, the things that we all needed to know, the things that you needed to learn, the things that maybe for a large county that has 10 mappers, that it's easy to transfer from one mapper to the next, and that so that they know, understand it, and they are able to carry it on. We had to think about the smaller counties that only had one or two people, that when somebody left, that knowledge left. It was gone. I have to admit, the presentation on eminent domain is exactly what I'm trying to get at. That was a fantastic presentation. He covered the law, how it affects the assessor, what your duties are, how you're supposed to react for assessment purposes. A very valuable presentation that can go a long ways. The main crux of my, I guess, complaining through the years has been a lot of great AutoCAD, a lot of great GIS presentations. And then you have another year of more great AutoCAD and GIS presentations. The other thing I'm going to throw out here is I made a list of 15 topics, and I did this over the course of probably less than a week. And what I did was, we get a letter from the public that would ask something, or I have the supervisor mapper come in with something that was unusual, and it's like, that is a topic that belongs at a Cadastral Mappers Conference. But the more I got thinking about it, I feel like doing one better than that, in that I don't understand why this organization is not pursuing the training similar to what your change in ownership staffs are doing. Change in ownership staff, approximately 5, maybe 7 years ago, recognized the need for training. So they got some of the key people throughout the state, got together, they created a change in ownership level 1 class. And they started to offer it around the state. And they could not offer it enough to suit the demand. Then you had level two come out, level three. They now have five courses, and they're planning a sixth. And every one of those offerings is filled the day it's announced. This organization can do the same thing. A lot of talent, a lot of knowledge. What you do is, for instance, the eminent domain presentation, that would be one small aspect. Change in ownership would deal with that, and then they move right on to the next subject. You could get one aspect he left out was the fee title versus the easement of the government interest. Misconceptions regarding the tax-exempt common area. I'm sure that everybody's dealt with the fact that everybody comes in and says, why are you taxing my common area? And it's not even us. It's a direct charge that somebody else applied to it. You've got direct charges, special assessments, SPP parcel maintenance. I realize the state board maintains them. But for instance, on our assessment roll, we still show Union Pacific. We've got a couple of telephone and telegraph companies that haven't existed for 25 years. Condominiums and timeshares is another issue that I'm constantly hearing about. How do you draw them? What makes them legal? When should you? When shouldn't you? I could go on. Like I said, I've got a list of like 15 of them here. I think I've kind of vented enough, said my point. I don't want to wear out my welcome. I would like to try to come again if you haven't close again. But the other aspect is if anybody has any questions, for me, it's there's only about half a dozen people I recognize out there, so you're all new to
this. Here, about 15 minutes.
Oh, geez, you're gonna put me on the spot. What do you do when a county line moves? Not everybody's faced with it, but it is a very factual occurrence that takes place. We're faced with it now for the second time in just a few years. The issue of assessor's maps versus owner's names versus addresses out on the web. Each county handles it a little bit differently. But who is covering the legal aspects with you? Who's telling you why we are and why we aren't? You have some counties that have got the maps out there and others are saying we can't because of legal issues. Historical property research. Some counties can, some don't. Why would you want to get involved with it? Why would you want to stay clear of it? Calculating square footages of parcels less than an acre. The AH manual says you calculate everything an acre or larger. That manual was rewritten in 1992 at this organization's urging. We worked with Jay Hubert for a couple of years. It's one of those aspects that back in the early 90s may have been applicable. But today, can you get away with not calculating the square footages of parcels smaller than that? I know we have. I know several other counties have. The legally created parcel versus the assessor's parcel. That is another one that comes up. And again, remember, these are things that came up in just a week. How many of you have a memorandum of understanding with your local cities for GIS updating exchange services? We have exchanges with two going on in our third city. We do certain updating. We have a city that does updating for us. Another lost part that's taking place is how to locate a deed. The talent and the knowledge base. It used to be that if you needed to hire somebody, you'd find somebody from the title company. They came in and knew how to locate a deed. All that knowledge and experience left the country, or they didn't do it either. For a lot of counties, are you still locating your legal descriptions of your deeds that record every day? We haven't for several years. We stay between 10 and 20 days behind. I hear nightmares of other counties that are spending, they're 90 days behind in locating deeds just to get them processed. And the last one, actually there was 17, I'm sorry. Yearly Land Conservation Agreement Subvention Act map. A lot of people don't understand that. Why do we do it? Some counties probably aren't even faced with it, don't even know what it is. But that's something that the change in ownership staff also do. There's a lot of things that they cover that are unique to certain counties, but they cover it all. Give everybody that knowledge, and it pays off. That's all. Any others?
Could you explain more, Gary, about how you came to transfer properties by not reading the legal description?
We were 88 days behind, and if everybody knows the system, supplementals, the longer you wait to get a property transferred, sometimes you miss subsequent transfers. So the important thing was to get caught up so that subsequent transfers didn't affect the supplemental and get sent to the wrong place. So we took a look at the deeds and said, why have we been locating these lengthy, long, drawn-out legal descriptions when the parcel number is right there on the deed? Then we looked at the fact that the parcel number is right there on the deed board. The owner's name that says they're transferring it to somebody is right there on the document. Who are we to say that that's not the parcel they intended to transfer? So the decision we made was, is this going to create more errors than not locating? And we figured it was worth a try. We're actually creating less errors now that we don't locate. And the type of errors are so much easier to fix than when we were locating. So the next aspect that took place was the first few times we transferred by APN, and let's say they were transferring two lots in a subdivision, we only transferred one because there was only one APN on there. We threw it back on the title company. We're not the title industry. They reported a deed, they only put one APN on there. They gave us a P-Corps, signed under penalty of perjury, that was true, correct, and complete. Only had one APN on. We threw it back on them. They got smarter. They started doing a better job. And it's gradually just made things easier and easier. All right. There's somebody back here first.
Gary, can you talk about your challenges with timeshare?
That's a whole day course.
Briefly.
Timeshares, the hard part is the fact that it's not so much the setting up of a timeshare and getting your numbering schemes right. It's after they've been created, so many of the organizations that have these treat them like a feed slip to a car. And if you don't want the car anymore, you leave it on the side of the road, you abandon it. And it's that kind of mentality that's made timeshare is probably the biggest challenge in that tracking and keeping complete ownership records has been the one big factor. The other factor is the timeshare groups that either want separate bills issued versus those that don't. We have two that I think, one that gets separate bills, and when you're separately billing a timeshare, you're creating a $30 tax bill. So some of the challenges you're faced with is, okay, you created 7,000 timeshare units for week increments over the course of a year, and each one of these get hit with a direct charge that exceeds the regular tax bill. You don't have a lot of people that are unhappy. So that's another factor that we really had to hassle with. I don't know if there was something specific. Like I said, timeshare is something you can just go on and on with. The different problems and aspects.
We don't have that yet, but I can only see it's coming.
Yeah. We've got them everywhere from biannual to weeks every year to bi-monthly. They're very creative.
Yeah, one thing I would like to, for your peace of mind, in LA County, I don't know about this class that you mentioned, it is given to all the counties or what. Within our mapping group, we used to have an old manual that Gary and I are rewriting now. Hopefully we can present it at the next conference and share it with anybody who wants to take it and modify it. In that one, it's not a drafting manual. It is a procedures manual. So it's just so that knowledge that people have, and we have accumulated all these years, we can pass to everybody. So when you get a new hire, you will have all this knowledge at hand. So that's the intention. Now, with regards to training, we keep a very active training program within our office. In fact, our mapping supervisors, we teach classes for appraisers and for ownership personnel in how to read and interpret maps, how to do locates and legals.
We did much the same thing over the past couple of years. Sashi is going, she did Section 11 properties and TRA changes, and we had appraisers attend these things. And they were getting more value out of it than I think the mapping group was. But the CASIC group spends most of their time talking about the legal aspects of what is being done, the decisions that are being made, because they realize that 58 counties, but 58 different, we have different systems. With the exception of Megabyte, that I think affects 20 and some odd counties, you have probably 25 other computer systems that procedurally it's hard to bring everybody together, but the legal aspects of what we're doing is very easy to teach. Anything else?
Good points, Gary.
Another
good point. You had spoken about the eminent domain. I also thought it was very interesting. We have kind of a contentious issue in our office about the cancellation of taxes when they're requested from the acquiring agency. And we have adopted a policy where the property has to go exempt either by final order of condemnation or deed for the cancellation of taxes process, as compared with the order of possession. Well, we found that the order of possession is a date of apportionment that you would go back to after the company's acquired. But if you cancel the taxes on the order of possession, it could take 3 or 4 years before it's actually acquired. And then you would have a cancellation of taxes and then subsequent tax bills.
Yeah, there's
what's your position?
There's a very slight difference in order of possession versus day of possession. If you look at a lot of the documents really close, there's a lot of them that say that they're ordering possession to take place on a certain date, and you're right. It's kind of like a Les Pendens, where they're saying there's a pending action taking place here, but I don't, through the years, I've seen countless Les Pendens that never panned out. So you really have to look carefully for the actual date of possession is what we go off of, not just the order to take possession. Then the other aspect is, of course, the easement versus the fee title. And is the easement sufficient to encumber the right of the fee owner? But the other part about the tax cancellation, I think is that...
Have exempt property acquired.
Right.
But if the property is acquired and the order of possession doesn't meet the standards
right.
of acquisition.
That's why I say you need an actual statement that is the date, a date that they took possession. That's one of the prerequisites for ownership is not just barely the title, but that you actually have possession of the property that you can exercise. But the other aspect on the tax cancellation, if you look at the 5800 series RMTs, we don't cancel the taxes anymore. The auditor is required to do that. So that's another aspect that I would say with a proper training course, expand on everything he said. There's a couple of other aspects that we didn't cover. For instance, if Placer County owns a piece of property and sells it to Sacramento County, is that taxable or exempt? It has all the outward appearances of being a Section 11 property, but it's not. It's because a tax-exempt agency purchases from a tax-exempt agency, and the property is exempt at the time of acquisition, it remains non-taxable. So those are a lot of aspects that, like I'm trying to stress here. Let's get back to some of the core items. The AutoCAD GIS, we can't do it without it anymore. I realize that. The last time I drew a map was in 1998. I did it with Ken and Anton Lennon. I think I was still a little faster than the AutoCAD map. I don't know how good that do us now. But, Yes. Any other questions?
We have so many problems with transferring title in our office as far as they're transferring title, but they're not doing it in such a way that's exactly like the document before, how we have it in our system. We have huge cold files, and the title companies aren't coming up to the plate.
We had,
at
the time we made the change to stop locating, the other thing we decided was we were no longer going to function like a title company. It was not our job. Our main task was it sufficient to understand these, what Ralphie had said, the intent, what was the intent, and if it's sufficient for us to interpret it for property tax purposes, we go with it. We've got deeds that they didn't even include a legal description with it. Who cares? When they came down there, we transferred it. The owner's names may have varied differently because they misspelled it.
Yeah,
you know, we fix it, we move on. We're not a title company. Why should we be policing something the title company should have taken care of? How many? We at one time we had probably 800 documents that we were holding for problems.
Yeah.
And I'd say for the same kind of title problems, we have 20. On an ongoing basis, it never gets over 20 or 30 documents.
Could you just go ahead and
talk
about that?
Yes.
I don't. One thing I want to stress is I want to reinforce what Gary just said. In our office, we have a lot of data, a lot of information. I get calls all the time from a consultant or whoever wanting to get this information, and I'm going to try to help you. As a public servant, I think all of us, want to provide what we can to the public. But I've had to step back, and as Gary said, it's not your responsibility to do the title company's work. What you need to do is to examine your processes, figure out what is your statutory mandated function, and draw a line. If it's quick and easy, yeah, help them out. But you need to stop thinking of simply because someone outside of your organization is asking for something. If it is not required by statute, government code, R&T code, any other code, if it's not required, you apologize profusely and say no. That is a very critical issue in the function of your office. When you start taking that approach, Gary, did your workload start dropping just a little bit?
I'd say it dropped a little bit, and it got more efficient. It was surprising. I have to admit, I was one of the people with my feet stuck in concrete. We had to locate the dang deeds. You have to, because we had to make sure we were transferring the right property. But I'll be the first to stand up and say, I was wrong. It has, how many times have you said, somebody's come in and asked, why is that parcel on the assessor's map? Well, it's created for assessment purposes. There's a TRA line running through it. Why can't you do that same thing with your title? Well, you're, like you said, your responsibility is to get out an assessment roll and make sure the tax bill goes to the proper part, the proper owner. Why would you want to leave it in the prior owner's name because it was a technical flaw in the deed?
Why would you want to leave it in the prior owner's name just because they put a parcel number on the document?
What was that again?
So why would you want to leave it in the prior owner's name just because they didn't put a parcel number on there?
Because they didn't put a parcel number on there?
Yes.
Well, what we were at the time, what we were doing is, okay, let's take the example of no legal description. You have a transfer from one party to another. There's no legal description. Well, technically, there has to be a legal description for it to be a proper modified transfer. The kind of the hold we had over the property owner to say, fix this, re-record your deed with a legal description was to leave the prior owner's name on there. Because nobody wants to receive a property tax bill in the prior owner's name. So eventually, they complained to the title company enough, they'd re-record, you'd be able to fix the deed, transfer the ownership, and move on.
But your mandate is to identify and locate all these properties. You leave out one property, that property goes into a tax sale. And when it's ready to go to the tax sale, you find that problems across the assessor, they're not properly identified, in fact, when they should have, this property that is now taxi called for 5 years.
Like I said, our error rate actually decreased. We do get the rare call where somebody says, you know, I really transferred 3 parcels and you only transferred 2. And we will then pull it out, take a look at the legal description and say, yeah, you're right, we did miss it. We fix it, we move on. But again, that is becoming a rarity. We don't get that very much anymore. And it's taken us less time to deal with all.
How do you identify parcel cuts without reading the legal?
Title companies, and usually on the P Corps, they're putting portion on there.
Not always,
but the other respect is the appraiser a lot of times will take a look at the value and say, hey, this isn't sufficient to cover the entire parcel. Sometimes they'll let us know that this was actually a split when it wasn't. Again, it's that educating everybody to be a little bit better. Most parcel splits anymore are mostly the result of an MBR, so you've got a adjoining document that tells you that more than likely there's a split going on, or it's a transfer of a new lot and a parcel map or a subdivision. At least for our county, it's a rarity to get somebody that's got the 20-acre parcel and by legal description they've written out a means and bounds to kind of come out. Again, a rarity that shouldn't prevent you from saying, why should we gear our whole system to the rarity when we need to get the work done? Get the right.
In our county, we have some areas where there's subdivisions, old subdivisions, the lots were 25 feet each. People own multiple lots, and they're selling off portions of it. Now, they list the one parcel number that covers all, say, 10 lots.
You need to sell five. For your county, it may not work, but you also need to make a choice. Do we want to hold up the whole process for a few rare cases where a developer bought up a bunch of paper subdivisions and is selling them off piecemeal? Our transfer staff does go through a little bit of review because on the P Corps it has a description on there, and they'll usually verify if you know it's lots 5, 6, and 7, and they'll look at our parcel description on the file. If it's parcels 5 through 9, they'll know it's a split, but they're not sitting there running there.
You what other counties like the portion of portion of land is wide all over, I mean. So in some cases, in some cities, for us, they ask us to show those portions as parcels. But I don't know what other counties think about. Should we show it as parcels to distinguish the value of the parcels?
That's one of those that I know you're probably going to get as many counties to say they parcel it as those that in our case, we try to avoid creating parcel numbers for areas of the northern roads, especially when you know that there are direct charge agencies that are out there looking for every dollar they can. So if you create a parcel for a strip that was probably acquired for roadway, but you don't know for sure, and you stick a parcel number on it, and then they hang a mosquito abatement direct charge on it, there's going to be some upset people. So we have tried to avoid parceling anything that would fall into that category. I'm going to pull the training session right here. I'm told to stop. So.